Hi, thank you so much for talking with me today for the Busan International Short Film Festival. I want to keep saying the Busan Short Film Festival, but I guess it's important to put the international in there.
Actually, you are. More than I don't know, but the festival being 40 years old, it's true because it is, yes, the same company, but technically the name changed over the 40 years, at least twice. For, at first it was only a festival for Korean short films.
Right.
And it started in 1980, so the first 20 years it was only Korean shorts. Then in 2000 it became Busan Asia Short Film Festival, and in 2010 Busan International Short Film Festival. So technically under that name,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's only been 13 years, but it's the same legal entity or whatever.
Right, you know, it's just the name, but it's the same organization with the same purpose. So, but before we begin the full interview, usually for my interviews, I like to have my guests, I always ask my guests to say a bit about themselves and what got them into filmmaking and working in the film industry. And for you, I'm going to ask you, of course, like what made you interested in South Korean films in particular, because you're a professor now at the Busan Asian Film School. But for you, what started you on the path to working into films and being a filmmaker?
So, I studied cinema in Paris. I'm French. My name is Sébastien Simon. Hi. Starting with the basics of introducing. So I'm French, but I studied cinema in Paris in 2001, 2, 3, 4. But in 2003 and 4, I was in La Sorbonne, and one of my classmates was Korean. And so her name is Chae Kyung-jung. She comes from Busan, but she still lives in Paris. But at the time, she is a documentary filmmaker. As we were finishing our master's degree, and being in the same class, she had received that grant from the bigger Busan International Film Festival to help finance her documentary project. And so I became the editor of that project. And so for me, it was my first gig. It was super indie, like editing in someone's bedroom, conditions, but the film being financed by the bigger film festival in a way was selected for the following edition of that festival. So in 2006, with the film being completed and having and being at the program of that festival, I came to Korea. So it was 2006. That was my very first time in Korea. Only 2 months at the time, and I was 23 years old, and I had zero capacity to plan anything for a career. So certainly that the fact that I'm here now, it stems out of this in some ways, because after that documentary was done, the title of the film is Korean Don Quixote.
Okay.
Ihise. So Ihise is the protagonist of the film. The title, his name is part of the title. So that docu was then screened at a few other festivals, and one of them is called the Korean Film Festival in Paris. At the time, it had a slightly different name, but the founders, two of the founders of that festival in Paris, they are the director of, and the president of the festival and the artistic director of the festival here. So by meeting them when they were living in France and doing that other festival at the time, I also edited a docu they made after that. So while being in Paris, I just got a few of those connection, I guess, with Asian filmmakers who tend to, some of them come to study in Paris, spend a few years, and then sometimes return in their country. So those jobs in France laid the path, I guess, to eventually coming here, but it wasn't a straight.
Right, it wasn't planned. You just kind of fell into it.
Yeah, right. I was an editor, like not a festival programmer, organizer. It was. It happened, you know, not an absolute coincidence either, but still quite lucky. In 2011, I left Paris. I felt like, okay, let's try to be a digital nomad, whatever that means. And I thought, okay, if I go to Beijing, Seoul, and Busan, maybe even Montreal. I had just a handful of connection that I knew-ish. And I thought, maybe I get a gig out of editing something for a couple of weeks and I can travel just a bit more. I really thought it would be at most 1 year of this, and then I would be bankrupt, of course. It became what I live here. It's been 12 years. I still sometimes don't really understand. But it's noble from seeing those two friends, from the director and artist and director of the festival, meeting them again after a couple of years, after they had returned here, just catching up, and the festival director, Charmin Jolly, eventually just at lunch just asked me, well, so are you looking for a job? Yeah, kind of, sure. I'm not going back to Paris, right? No.
Yeah.
Oh, how about festival programming?
Right.
Like, sure, but what should I do? So that was 2012 at that festival. And in a way, since then I have been a member of the program team of this for 12 years, but 13 editions. I did end up little by little working for a few other film festivals, including Slamdance.
Right, the one you mentioned that last night, because that's the one at Sundance. And so that Slamdance is, I think to me, Slamdance is a bit more, the word I want to use is avant-garde, but it's almost a bit more urban-ish with regards to like the types of films that generally show there. Because what I find interesting is that at different film festivals, even for the short films, like they have their own different feel. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Slamdance, their flagship program is called the Anarchy Program, Anarchy Shorts. Their programming team for that, they call themselves the Department of Anarchy. Okay. That program really sort of brings everyone's attention.
Right.
Slamdance, like people want to see, or what's the crazy movies this time.
Yeah.
Super cool. So I say work, but actually when you're an alumni, like a selected filmmaker at Slamdance, they afterwards they ask like, oh, how about doing pre-selection for them? So it's a way to keep the little community of alumni of Slamdance a bit together. It's not exactly a gig, it's like voluntary binge watching of short films, but it was still a nice way to sort of stay connected for a few years. Now I also teach cinema, yes. So actually at Dongseo University, I teach film editing, which is my actual original skill, area of expertise. The Busan Asian Film School, on behalf of the festival, I created this partnership with AFIS, just essentially to have a showcase of the school at the festival. They call it a school, it's more of a project incubator for filmmakers who are already in activity. But they bring, let's say, 20 filmmakers from neighboring Asian countries, one from China, one from Japan, one from Indonesia, and they stay 6-7 months in Busan, develop their feature length project. But then while they're here, they're like literally a few subway stations away.
Right.
They're filmmakers already, they're not newbie, you know, so they have made films, so why not show what they've done in their countries before? So it is a bit of a panorama of Asia for the festival in terms of what we show. It is a showcase to the name of the school, so for them it's so beneficial. And for the filmmakers, well, they're here for 7 months, they might as well, some of them at least, might as well just be actually guests of the festival. So it felt like a good situation where everyone benefits from this. And it's an ongoing thing. Every year they change fellows, they don't call them students, right? So they change fellows every year. They select them, so obviously they select people with some level of careers, right, some achievements already. So the quality of the films is never an issue. Like I know I'm going to find movies that will be nice to show and interesting to show, but it guarantees, it maximizes actually the number of filmmakers who attend that section,
right,
or who give a Q&A. Like it's all of them. It's not just a handful of them. If they're here, they, so the, everyone benefits, I suppose. And it's, I was assigned the Hub of Asia section of the festival to curate, so it's very interesting, but it's the one Asian film school in Busan. It's like really perfect situation.
It is. Hey, what I find interesting, like as you mentioned, they're fellows and not students, and that they are experienced filmmakers in their own countries, is that it gives not only them an opportunity to show their work here in Busan, but it gives other, it gives the Busan locals and local South Korean aspiring filmmakers and those in the industry the chance to see films from other Asian diaspora countries. But also, I think one of the things that I really love about film and like going to film festivals is that it gives people a broader perspective of the world in general. And you can, when you watch films from other countries, it gives you an idea of how the film industries there work and like the different interpretations of genres. Like an Indian horror film isn't going to be the same thing as a Japanese horror film or a South Korean horror film or a Malaysian horror film. That's one of the things. One of the reasons I'm so interested in Asian cinema in general is each country has a very particular feel to how they film. Even though each director has their own DNA stamp on their films, there's a overall cultural identity to filmmaking that fascinates me about Asian cinema in particular. Like, I can watch a Chinese drama, I watch a Japanese drama, I watch a Korean drama or a Thai, and I don't even have to hear the language to know what I'm looking at. Because like this, the way they film, and the acting, like, there's a cultural instinct in the way like Koreans act differently to like Japanese actors, like because of their training and everything, they're completely different.
Besides, you know, I'm not exactly an expert in terms of festival programming. Like, I don't program feature length festival, obviously, so it's hard to really compare super directly. But it seems to me also that because it's short film, it's the film we receive are less streamlined,
right,
oftentimes. Perhaps also a bit more spontaneous. Mm-hmm. Like, some, you can literally make a short film on a whim, so, and it can still be good and screenable.
Right.
Whereas screening at a festival, so it can really be or feel very spontaneous. Mm-hmm. So that is maybe why I have to admit that I do enjoy the job more than I maybe imagined at first. It felt at first like, because I was more like a coordinator of programming,
right,
so it felt like a lot of managing of screening files and downloading subtitle things,
mm-hmm,
and translating something, organizing it. Whereas the curatorial aspect,
right,
of that is becoming, since I became officially a programmer in 2018 for that section, it really became something that I feel like I discovered it more and more, rather,
right,
than just like, well, it's a job, there is one task,
right,
to do. And I do the same every year. It's really super interesting, actually, to consider the practice,
mm-hmm,
in that regard. Like, for example, you were mentioning the differences or the subtle, somewhat, the DNA sort of feeling somehow of the image within a certain genre.
Right.
And for me, I like that a lot. Create sometimes in some of my programs, they would be, let's say, movies that seem to be very similar. If you read the synopsis, they're like, oh, another movie about, I don't know, chairs. They're like, yeah, but that one is from China, that,
exactly,
one is from Korea, and it's not the same way to think of chairs or to shoot a chair. So, of course, it's not a program on chairs, but one time I had this idea, okay, finding several short films that were shot in mass protests.
Right.
And I found like a docu from Indonesia, an experimental movie from Thailand, a more sort of pansori-based movie from Korea. It was super different in terms of the style of the films, but they were shot during mass protests.
Right.
And the program was called Occupy Asia. But it was very funny to devise the program like this. First come up with some sort of way to sort of show those differences in a much more targeted way.
Right. And for this year, what was your not only your direction for the Hub of Asia program this year, but what was your overarching theme where you were like, this is the theme I want for this year?
So this time, The festival itself, every year we choose a different guest country, and that's another section that the artistic director of the festival curates. This year, we chose a couple of years ago already, we always choose a bit in advance. It was going to be the USA, so okay, wonderful. But that's someone else's section. But in 2018, when I visited Sundance and I befriended other filmmakers, a few of them were Asian Americans. It was interesting for me, like as a European who did not grow up in Asia or in the US anyway, to just hear people's very direct perspective on their circumstance and their sort of reality, I guess. Hearing it from them, like how they still felt, maybe still now, I guess, but somewhat left out of some of those curatorial trends sometimes, you know? And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, thinking back, even at the time, 2018, being here already for 5 or 6 years, I couldn't really come up with a title of a film that was made in the US by an Asian or Asian American filmmaker who sort of made it through the selection process and was in selection at our festival or the bigger festival. Like, nothing really came spontaneously to mind, and I thought, well, that's an interesting, I don't even want to say trend or topic here, but that's a very interesting fact. Are they Asian? Are they American? Do festivals just seem to not really feel that matches either box or not? And I felt, well, eventually we will choose the USA as a guest country. That's going to happen. So I might as well just keep that idea in mind for then. And so that's one of the programs that I have in Hub of Asia. The program number two is Asian Americana. So 6 films about Asian American characters, Asian American concerns, stories, and of course, directors and teams. And I try to also be a bit mindful. So one film is more, let's say, Chinese American. One is more Japanese American, Philippine American. So that's, obviously, it's not just this one big collective thing. It's, of course, multiple different different experiences and people as well. So that at least the program seems balanced in that aspect as well. But in terms of the theme of that program, like I said, the concept within the concept, one movie might be loosely about immigration, yes, or another one might be about racism, sure, but actually the whole program of 6 films is actually about multiculturalism. And especially how artistic practice of people from different origins sort of seep through the American sort of cultural, what do you bring to the cultural table of that country of residency as a foreigner. Being a foreigner myself, it's hard not to really think about that as well when I do my films here. But here I felt it's maybe a different approach. It's not just about the difficulties. It's also about what all those people bring to the U.S. in some ways, right? So it's a way to tie in with the guest country, USA, but still being like a broader impression on Asian, filmmakers, hub of Asia for once, right? So that matches more the guest country program. And the third program that I curated is called The Death of Cinemas.
Every time I think of that name, I'm like, it's so dramatic.
It's so European, dramatic.
It makes me think of like someone in France and going, yes, cinema, it is dying. I mean, it's super dramatic, but that's how I think of it in my head.
But it must, maybe. So this one, I also had the idea for maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I just kept it for the 40th edition. It's mildly provocative, I guess. And this one matches the theme of the festival, which is cinema and heritage. But the death of cinema predates when we eventually chose that slogan, I guess. So it's coincidence, but I felt like it's just perfect. The day that you celebrate the birthday for the anniversary of the festival, you also kill the art form. It's perfect. Sorry, this one, it happened because, of course, the title is a bit provocative, but simply what happened is that over the numbers of films that I see every year or that we receive, oh look, there's a movie from Taiwan about shot within an abandoned movie theater. Oh look, there's a movie from Japan about a struggling movie theater during COVID times.
Right.
Or how look, there's a movie shot in a burned down movie theater, the venue.
Right.
But what if the venues keep disappearing everywhere, then what happens to the art form, I suppose, right? So of course it's the physical space, but it's cinema with a capital C at the same time. And this one was in a way for me this year, if I had to like recommend just one program, that's the one I would recommend in a way. It's just fun.
I want to talk about that because the idea of the death of cinema, the way you're talking about it, for a lot of people, like especially for me being a film critic and a journalist and having I'm always on Twitter, but like so many of my friends work in the industry in some aspect. Like a lot of us are either film critics or journalists, directors, writers, producers, and we've been talking about how COVID itself has affected the film industry. Like for a lot of every interview that I have done since 2021 has been for a film made during the pandemic. Or some were films that started before the pandemic and were completed during the pandemic, but it had like a space of time in between, you know, because of shutdown and everything. And one of the constants of most of my interviews has been everyone talking about how filmmaking itself feels different now, and even the film experience feels different now. And there literally is a before COVID, and there is, and like everything after is, it will always be after, because like the way that we see film is different. Like the way we interpret stories, even if the story isn't about COVID, like there are some things that before the pandemic started, we would have never associated with a pandemic. But not, whether or not it's COVID or whatever, but even, and I think it's funny because like, you know what we had in the early 2000s, we had the H1N1 outbreak. And that didn't affect cinema or
like this way, right?
Yeah, it didn't affect culture the same way that the pandemic has affected everything. It has affected everything. So I want you to talk about having and it's not only just about COVID, but just like the way filmmaking is approached now. Like, have you noticed a difference in the approach to filmmaking itself and telling stories from before the pandemic and now? Because I think there is the sensibilities towards film being an expressive art form is changing. Well, for me, from what I've been thinking of.
In terms of short films, because there is, over the numbers of so many short films made every year, there's always this constraint in terms of budget and like sort of production value. Like it's rare that you can really have such an expensive set or an expensive team or an expensive anything. So that short films tend to always have this more intimate scope, I suppose, right? If not very sort of hyper-condensed set of characters and locations and whatever. So I visually, or in terms of more, let's say the festival screens a lot of more classic short film drama, by opposition to be genre-driven, like this is a genre-driven festival. So it's hard to tell that it's obviously looks so super different. But over the numbers of films, just because it was always sort of limited anyway for short films, but of course, over the number of films that we see and receive every year, it's clear that the pandemic field, it's a genre in itself now.
Right.
It's super interesting. It's very tempting, actually, at that point to put together some of those very good pandemic short film, like film that really address how it was for whoever in their situation, and it's hard not to select some of them anyway.
Right.
Some of them are just very good. Last year, or 2 years ago, we had a movie called E14 from the UK. It was really great. It was shot in during lockdown, but it's actually about the architecture of the city and people being from your building. You can see the building across the street and you can see people living like in a little lemmings house thing, but it's obviously pandemic time, so people train, stay healthy in their apartment. So it had a very sort of urban, like,
and almost like a voyeuristic feel, kind of.
Plus that. So, but that's one of the films. Another film that I saw that was really, I really wanted to show it, but a lady who was stuck on a cruise boat with a few of her colleagues over like half the year, just, well, no passengers, no actual cruising, just man the boat and do nothing. So she recorded her life, and the film is just, it's a very interesting docu, but it's just, it's probably too soon to impose this on an audience. Like, come and watch the film that sort of reminds you of how painful it was.
But you see, the interesting thing about that is, before the pandemic, a film like that, we would have never associated with a lockdown. We would have looked at it as being an avant-garde film about isolation.
As an era.
And you know, about the human inouai and all of this kind of stuff. But now, like, you see any kind of film, even if it has nothing to do with COVID, and the person who wrote the script like 10, 15 years ago, they just happened to have the budget to film it. Now we'd see and be like, this film has to be about the pandemic. And I think it's just such an interesting way how we as human beings look. I think it says a lot to us as the way we process situations through film, and how we are able to, like, we suddenly look for answers in film that would, like, even the filmmaker never intended.
Answers, or I suppose the catharsis, right?
Right, the
emotional exorcism of pain or whatever. But yeah, I mean, for that, I'll say that for at least for our festival, like, because we do it in spring time. So 2020 was just the most difficult year, because the beginning of the pandemic. And you're like, oh, it's February. The festival is in April. Are we canceling?
What do we do?
Are we postponing? So you having to plan for like two or three different possibilities.
Right.
Like, if we postpone, when do we do it? If we cancel, well, we can't because we lose all funding and everything's okay. So what do we do? And just postponing it, and eventually still having to turn it online anyway, and just a wasted year in a way.
Yeah.
Like, all those programming ideas we had, they were, you know, online is cool, but when you don't plan for it, when you just buy to sort of salvage what you can, it was really, it felt wrong. But luckily, as early as the spring 2021, at least in Korea, it was managed well, I suppose, the pandemic, right? The numbers were crazy up until the variant, sort of a bit later in 2021. But somehow it worked, so to the point that we could have actual screenings.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was like you had to scan your temperature,
right.
You had to do this and that, have a mask. We could only sit one in three seats.
Mm-hmm. 6 feet apart. In that.
So,
yeah.
But at least it was doable in theaters, whereas in other festivals, it seemed like it was really a couple of years of mostly online.
Mm-hmm.
First, it was just one.
Yeah.
And then, and kind of redo it again. So it, but it was still, it feels like this year now is maybe where it's possibly actually back to normal.
It feels more normal-ish.
Yeah, like guests come, right? From the
I'm here. I'm
more
here.
Easily
I,
than last
year. For sure. Definitely. And the other aspect of the death of cinema, which is probably, I'm not sure if you would have even been thinking about it, but apart from the whole aspect of COVID, even before 2020, when I'm thinking of the death of cinema, I'm thinking of how, I'm not sure how it is here in Busan, but in, like, for instance, in Toronto and like in other like smaller islands, like I'm from Barbados, so like Barbados, we have two main theater cinema theaters. And we have a drive-in theater, and we have another theater called The Globe, which existed for probably like 30, 40 years, but it's gone now. But when I think of the death of cinema, I'm thinking like the death of independent theaters, you know, the death of things like Blockbuster, you know, like local DVD video rental stores, you know, the death of at home, the death of when we like the experience of watching TV and films at home now is different to how it was back in my day. Like I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and for us it was an experience to go to the video store and rent a VHS tape, you know, go get like buy rent 4 tapes and get the 5th one free. And like for a lot of people that helped us, I think the culture of cinema and film experiences from an audience perspective is very different to how it was like 10, 15 years ago. And I think a lot of it has to do with streaming. So when I think of like the death of cinema, I'm thinking literally like the actual theater experience and just the community experience of having a going to film. And like even now, when we have the community experience, it's usually from big blockbuster films, and it's not just regular like small films, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. Blockbusters for sure, but I was actually thinking about, at least in Busan, the other international, the Busan International Film Festival became really one of those landmark festivals. Like, you know, every other festival in Korea is basically in the shadow of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Even that space here is more designed to host the other festival in terms of size. But also audiences go more willingly to that festival. And so yes, you do feel that festival vibe, wow, cool, and screenings are sold out, and suddenly you're sitting next to in a packed movie theater,
right,
which is like watching Babylon by Damien Chazelle and The Fablemans. There are a couple of scenes of the protagonist being in a movie theater and themselves watching a film, and I was like, oh wow, sold out theater. I forgot what it looks like.
Right?
For that program, I watched maybe 35 short films that I considered. And actually a lot of, maybe one third of them at least, Koreans. Because I really wanted to find that to include at least one Korean film, because, you know, showing how an abandoned movie theater in Taiwan looks like, it's interesting and it resonates with this other one in Japan. But I thought most likely our cinephile audience would mostly Korean, and having at least one film where they see what it looks like here or in Korea, let's say, if not Busan, would probably hit just a bit harder. And actually, the one Korean movie that I eventually chose doesn't have a movie theater scene, but it's just super crazy. It's an action comedy set in a post-apocalyptic future, near future.
I really love that genre.
And it's just, the protagonist is... Before the apocalypse, the protagonist was a movie critic.
Oh, wow.
So how do you survive in like sort of a discount Mad Max environment when you just knew how to grade movies?
That
is just so interesting.
That would
so
be
so clever.
Personally, yeah.
It's called Apocalypse Runner. So having selected that one, I had to dismiss, because I didn't want to screen also these other countries' movies. And actually, one film from Korea is in Korean competition. So I don't know if that's the one you saw. I forgot which number of competition it's in. But in Korean competition something, you would have there's a movie called Cinema Club.
Oh, I didn't see that one. I think that's in the Korean... Why are my contacts fogging up? Oh, that one is in the Korean competition one. So I haven't seen that one as yet.
So that film I considered for my Death of Cinema program, you'll see. Really matches everything. Mm-hmm. Like you see three movie independent movie theaters in Seoul, Changwon and Wonju, so two other smaller cities. Art house cinema, or like literally community cinema.
Right.
Obviously struggling during COVID, etc. One of them closing down. Sorry for the spoiler, but and it's really good. It's a really good docu. I felt. But if I selected for my program, then that film would not be selected in. Possibly in Korean competition,
right?
Which for that filmmaker is probably better, winning a prize, right? Possibly. I really don't know yet. But of course, I wasn't sure. Like, but at least leaving that film out of my Death of Cinema program, even though it really matches well, I'm glad she's in selection, like in competition, because the movie is really interesting. The timing is great, and yes, it echoes that Death of Cinema program in a way that is also good luck, like good situations. But some movies that I saw for that program, they are not from Asia, so I had to dismiss
by default.
And one of them is from Senegal, and it was just so interesting. It's called Sen Cinema, S-E-N Cinema, Senegal Cinema. Like, I have no idea. Like, so you discover in that film, it's a docu, how that the film industry was blossoming at the time and completely sort of capsized, and it was, you know, like 10 years ago at least, right? That I saw the film. It's just not an Asian film. I can't include it. But it's so interesting.
But that's the thing. You're actually leading into my next question, because I was going to ask about the thing about being a program in particular. You have to judge. You're kind of prejudging the films, because these kind of films, when they go into competition, then they'll be judged by the audience and the juries. But for you, you're prejudging before everyone else, and it's like, not that you're saying the films aren't good enough, but you have to figure, you have to, as you're saying, you have to see, is it matching the overall theme of the festival, and then is it matching the overall theme for the program itself, and like, because you have to consider, like, the films have to kind of complement each other in a way, right?
So, yeah, at least it was resonate with each other, it's how I tend to see it. In that sense, yes, I agree. But in that sense, there is still a big difference between how we will prepare the selection for the competition programs and what each of the programmers, including myself, do for our own curatorial programs or thematic programs. I said the thematic program, they don't come out of the submitted films, or maybe just a few. Usually it's, I can find the source of film for those thematic program can be, you know, a film I saw a few years ago. So it's interesting as a programmer to have that option, because frankly, over the years, I've seen so many films that I wish I could show, but I can't show every film, or a movie in one place that I really want to remember for, and eventually to include it here. Somehow, the worst thing is to have that chance. It's like, oh, cool! This year, if I program like this, I can show that movie. Which, hang on, what was the title again? Or when did I see it? Was it from Denmark or no? I'm forgetting things. Like, it's just too many films, right? But that's a thing that filmmakers, I'm not too sure, understand too much, is that programmers will not forget the movie that they enjoy or like or find good.
Right.
It's just the number. It's not based on fairness, quite frankly. Festivals are not designed to be fair, they're designed to show films, right?
Right.
So the selection process is not based on fairness. It's not unfair to be mean, it's just not fair. It's statistically, it's a ridiculous. The odds are ridiculous. We receive 3,500-ish,
and you're expected to watch all of them.
Submissions, but technically we choose only 16,
right.
40 for international competition, 20 for Korean competition out of those 3,000 something, and the odds are literally like 0.00. There's nothing fair about it. Quite frankly, we could program every year several different lineups with good films. Like, there is more good films than we can keep.
Right.
So it's this very bizarre mindset, at least to sort of go through the selection filter for the competition. Sometimes it could be like, oh, you know, we feel like we already selected too many movies from Europe. Let's balance it with a few more movies from elsewhere. Or
especially because the festival is in South Korea, you're like, we gotta at least, like, try to make sure we balance films with Asian people and not films strictly from Europe, or even if people films from Europe, you're like, they're not just white people in Europe. You have to show that there's like Arab people, black people, Asian people in Europe. Like one of the films in the competition today is a South Korean film, but it's set in Germany.
Oh, that's
right. So like that's, and I think that's another, that's one of the other beauties of film festivals, is it shows people that what they perceive to be, like, for instance, like the cultural makeup of a country or a city isn't necessarily what they expect, you know?
Yeah, in that regard, it's interesting because pretty much every year now, and it's a coincidence, it's not a tactic, but pretty much every year now, in Korean competition, we will have some of those movies, like that one, made by a Korean filmmaker. So again, tick the box, Korean. But the person is maybe a film student in Zurich last year, or the one from Germany. I forgot which condition, if the person is a student or not, but made like a co-production thing. Yes. And so, yeah, on the surface, the film is not made here sometimes. There was one made in the US by a Korean filmmaker at the festival in Korean condition 3 years ago, for example. And every year there seems to be a few more of those. I think it's interesting because Korean filmmakers will expatriate themselves as well and learn cinema somewhere else, and therefore their films, they have eventually the same sort of conundrum to solve. Like, do they submit it as an international film? But there is more submission, so the odds are not as good. Or as a Korean film, but then depending on the programmers of the festivals, those programmers could consider that that's not really a Korean film, is it? It's like, it's all, I don't know, it's all French people, spoken in French, the filmmaker's name is Korean, cool, but also another movie made in Germany, right? So it's an interesting thing, but it's part of what makes festival programming, festival selecting not fair. It's like, neither of those two decisions is fairer than the other. It could be considered more fair to say, no, the films have to be done only in Korea for the Korean competition. Right? Or you could say, no, Koreans who make films in Barbados, that's interesting, that's another way to make a Korean film. You know,
so have you ever thought of doing, like, I don't know for how this works, but for like in Toronto, what the Toronto Asian Film Festival does, as well as the Toronto International Film Festival does, is they have, like, throughout the year, apart from their main festivals, they have like small, like, individual festivals or small individual, like, special screenings. Like, for instance, like the films that you want to show that don't get selected for this main festival, like, do you have a program where, like, you can watch the films that didn't make, like, the final selection, but you're like, you know what, these films were really good and, like, they deserve to be seen, and that you want to highlight them and give them, the filmmakers, a chance to have their film seen?
Specifically that, first I'd say yes, throughout the full year, but let's say in the summer and early fall, we have other screens here and there. One is called Beast Returns.
Right.
So Busan International Short Film Festival, it's BISF. BISF Returns. So it's a touring program in a few other cities in Korea where we typically show the awarded films.
Right.
So that happens. And another one, and it's here, it's called the Moonlight Cinema in English, Dalbit Kukjang in Korean. And this one is more, let's say, a weekly or bi-weekly outdoor screening on the terrace overlooking Busan Port Bay. It's very scenic and interesting. But here again, I don't curate that, so in a way I'm slightly less 100% sure. But some of it would be like, yes, okay, the awarded films one time. Then the second time, maybe a program more for family. So it's somewhat of a more... we don't just recycle the same programs that we do during the week of the festival. Pre-selected it, let's say, or I, you know, shortlisted it, and eventually still it still doesn't make it. It's like, but I'll show it somewhere.
Right.
And I keep a sort of archive of titles and programming ideas just to put themes together already in advance. And my list now is like 300, it's an Excel document, it's very basic, but it's like 300 lines of just titles or program titles, right? So not always going to be able to come up with something as catchy as the death of cinema, but I do have a few that I'm also kind of eager to show someday. Because yes, some of those movies were good, like a lot of them are good, but the selection process is just unforgiving. Like, not dispassionate in that sense, but just, yes, a lot of films that we like, it's just conscious.
Right, I understand, because I get it, because one of my friends, Robin Citizen, she's the program director of Atlantic Cinema Team. And so, like, she's, like, every festival, when it goes up to festival season, she, like, we talk regularly, and she's always, like, so angst, filled with angst, because she's like, I love these films, like, I can't. And, you know, like, she travels to, like, different film festivals, she goes to different cities and countries, and she's, like, always, like, I really want to, like, highlight these films and things, but then it's just, like, at the end of the day, she has to be, as you said, kind of be, like, dispassionate, and to the filmmakers, it may seem cruel, but I think that's one aspect of film festivals that a lot of people don't really understand, like for people like you and like festival programmers and the directors and everything, like you have to realize it's not personal, and it's just a part of the job, and like, yes, technically, as you said, it's not fair, but that's just how it is, you know. And like, I think the best analogy that I can think for it is like for filmmakers too, like you're an editor, you have to make sure that to make your final cut, you gotta cut out a whole bunch of other scenes. Like, you're like, this was a fantastic scene, but it's not gonna work overall to the story. And you're just like, you're like, I love this scene, but you gotta go. Right?
It's very interesting, because having now to also teach editing while also curating for this, and so of course, you know, shamelessly pushing my students towards the festival, like, go watch something.
Yeah.
Go. But first they get to discover festival as they are studying themselves, which personally I didn't even do that when I was studying somehow. So, but at least they see, you know, they get a sense of that, like, oh yeah, you know, they're focused on making their one short film per semester. But you're like, yeah, but the festival will not curate film one by one.
Right.
Short films, I mean, will they, right? It's always that balance of films, and so the emotion of the theme of one movie will sort of seep through the next theme in the program, and so on. And so, it's programmers, we don't just think film by film, really, right? It's always, in a way, like in relation to the other films, as a balance of things. But then teaching editing is fun for them, because even now I try to remember when I studied, and I think this idea of, yes, not everything you shoot
into the final cut.
Needs to make it in the final edit. On the contrary, it's like, in a way, the more you cut out, and in a way, the more you sort of bring it to its core. Sort of. And it's something that it's really interesting to see some students actually try. Like, okay, let's try. What if they cut those 2 seconds that they cared about so much?
Right.
Or to see the opposite, like some students who over the post-production sort of period, we'll just not even have tried. And it's just, okay, sure. Yeah. At some point, I tell them, like, it's not my film at all. Sometimes I will point out, like, actual mistake, or like, fix it. Like, to just be a good editor. But suggestions is very different. I only would hope that they try them, and then choose by, like, literally watching the difference. Not imagining the difference and deciding that it's not good enough. Like, you have to see the thing. It's too easy to say, like, oh, I thought about it, but I'm still gonna keep my final cut at 29 minutes.
Just a bit over the half hour mark. And sometimes I think, you know, you can make this a full length feature as well. But I wondering if it's about if just culturally it's about pushing the envelope as much as possible, and like just saying, like, you know, like this, like, because one of the films that I just saw
I think it's called Next Town, where this film, I'm pretty sure it is pretty close to the half an hour mark. I could be wrong, but it felt like it. And when I was watching, this is a Korean film. I'm like, this right here, like just like the sensibility of it, like the timing, the space, and the cinematography, everything about it, like what we were talking about earlier, that I find for Korean short films, there is like, they push things just right until, I've always been wondering if that's a cultural thing. Like, so I know we have to wrap it up, but like, for that's going to tie into my last question, because my last question is, have you noticed a change in the, in kind of like the approach to filmmaking for South Korean filmmakers, or just particularly short films? Like, have you noticed like a change towards short films? Because I know for a lot of people don't consider short films, like everyone, they think film, they think feature length film. Right. They don't like, they don't automatically even think to like attend a short film festival or even go to school and learn how to make short films and everything.
A change, I'd say, in a way I want to say no, strangely enough, because in South Korea, for short films, not sure of, there's not a clear number, but I'd say like 90% whatever of at least those classic sort of drama short film, like, tend to be done in film school or like film departments of universities, whereby I genuinely think, because I see it with my students as well, at some point they just run out of semester time and the film still needs to be done, and so that extra time that an edit needs to just to naturally contract just a bit more, those few weeks where you go from finishing the movie to 95% to 100%, that difference, right, could be the difference between a movie that is submitted to a festival and it's 30 minutes, or if they had that just a bit more time in regards to their semester deadline thing, could be 25 minutes, and in a way, possibly literally better just by being more condensed. There's also, I think, the temptation of the feature length sort of approach, where I'm not 100% sure that binge watching those 40, 50, I forgot how many I watched, but 45 maybe, Asian American short films felt very refreshing in a way, because I can see like, oh, 15 minutes, 14, 16, 15, 15. Proper duration for a more efficient, more condensed and well put together short films, like not wannabe feature lengths, maybe someday, whatever. Like,
right. Yeah, because it feels like there are some films like that where I watch them and I just say, this feels like a proof of concept. You know, and not like an actual attempt at making an actual short film, because like sometimes I always wonder, some even for filmmakers, if they realize that short films are a art form in and of themselves, and they're just not a thing you make as a student to just prove pass that you know how to pass a grade and to show I know how to do filming, I know how to be a director because I made a short film, and I'm just like, no, it's an art form. Like you have to put as much love or even more love into a short film than a feature length film, because that's one of my things. That's one of the reasons I try to highlight short films as much as possible, because feature length films has all of this prestige. And even now we're in 2023, like people still don't really see short films as having value and as being, as I said, like a true art form in and of itself, you know? And you can tell when filmmakers, they themselves don't fully get that. Like they make a film and it's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know?
That's why the springboard idea that short film is just a way to reach the extra level. I mean, ideally, yes, of course. Could it be just a bit more than just that?
Right.
Should it be? I don't know. So I also think that it's rare that people literally dismiss what they do in that regard. It's just, at least in Korea, because a lot of the volume of films are made in film school, those who make it, they may have slightly, making the film itself might be a secondary concern by opposition to getting an A+ or something like that. It's a slightly different, not every filmmaker needs to worry about the grade that they get for that. But even duration-wise, even myself, like I made a 23-minute film once, and it was long take based, so it was hard to actually reduce to under 20. Mm. But I still wonder.
Yes, I guess that's the thing about filmmaking. Like you always wonder. You always wonder about the editing. You always wonder, and as a programmer, you always wonder about the films that didn't make it in, and the filmmakers themselves wonder about their films that didn't make it in, and you know, so it's just like, I guess that's the nature of the beast. That's the nature of the film industry, and that's the nature of festival industry as well.
Yeah, but it's also a thing about time, where, okay, for the competition, festival tend to have this sort of 1 or 2 year acceptance for submissions in regards to the year of completion and so, but technically the movies can be watched for forever. You can also decide that you're not gonna let your short films go by the wayside one after the next. Right? A month ago, I screened five of my short films made in Korea, and one of them was from 2013, and it was kind of weird to see again. But to see it with the next ones together was really funny, like really interesting, like, oh yeah, that's what I did 10 years ago, Jesus. I suppose I have hopefully become a bit better, but they do make sense together.
Right.
And also, it doesn't need to just disappear on some Vimeo link. You can still try to show it somehow.
And
success, it's kind of relative.
Exactly. Right? And that's how cinema, well, not that. And I think that's how.
please don't die.
I don't think, no matter as dystopian as this world is gradually becoming, wait, no, I just had a thought. Cinema could die. AI.
Oh, yeah, right. But again, maybe it must. Maybe it needs to. Maybe it's like it dies so it can be
reborn, like a phoenix raising from the
bigger
ashes.
Bigger and better.
And then, you know, like, I just went like super sci-fi in my head thinking, you know, like if the AI decided, people are just like, we're gonna make films with this AI. Like Disney has even been talking about using like AI for like regenerating people and people that have gone on. But then I'm thinking humans will eventually rebel and we'll be like, I'm gonna start talking about Terminator. No, Caroline, don't do it. You know, we'll have a revolution, a filmmaking revolution, and say we will not go quietly into that good night.
Yeah.